Blue light. Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it is February 19th, 2018. We got four bills up today, and we got a bunch of legislators who wanted to talk on them, so we're going to try to bounce around a little bit. We will first open a public hearing on House Bill 4068, so we'll open that, and Kayla.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4068 establishes requirements for seed production contracts and seed purchase contracts for commercially grown seed or seed mixtures. It specifies payments to the producer under a seed production contract is due no later than the earliest of either the date specified in the contract, 30 days after seed delivery, or July 1 of the calendar year following seed harvest. It clarifies the timeline for transfer of responsibilities for storage fee payments and risk of loss from producer to dealer, and it clarifies the seed production contract requirements apply to non-written seed production agreements. It specifies the terms of a seed production contract that the terms of a seed production contract must include the estimated date for seed delivery, the terms and estimated date for seed delivery, for the seed dealer to pay the seed grower, the amount of seed to be purchased, and the species cultivars and the quality standards of the seed to be purchased. It specifies the possible course of action if the seed dealer receives notice from the producer that test results indicate seed does not meet quality standards and an inquiry from the producer as to whether the seed dealer intends to purchase the seed. It authorizes the Oregon Department of Agriculture to determine whether timely payment has been made upon notification by a producer or seed grower. And it authorizes the ODA director to adopt rules and charge fees for the administration and enforcement of the act and to make mediation services available through the ODA for resolution of seed production contracts and seed purchase contracts disputes. It requires the ODA to report rule adoption to the next regular session of the Legislative Assembly. This bill has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, and it came across the House floor on a vote of 59-0.
How about that? I understand we have a love fest.
Chair Beyer, yes, we do. Thank you. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Anna Scharf. I farm with my husband and his brother. I'm not too far from here in Amity, Oregon, and I'm here today to speak a little bit on House Bill 4068 and ask for your support on that. This piece of legislation has actually been on my mind for over 6 years. Prior to coming to the farm, I worked in corporate America. When I came to the farm, I was a little lost, and frankly, there's a lot of people who'd say I'm still a little lost. But one question was always on my mind, and I couldn't wrap my head around the concept that farmers would grow a proprietary crop and have no clue if and when they would ever get paid for it. The provisions in House Bill 4068 are nothing new to the Oregon ag industry. During the 2011 legislative session, several bills were introduced to assist the grass seed industry with a dealing with proprietary seed. The outcome was House Bill 2159. It established some uniform contract seed terms, set payment schedules, and became a vehicle for financial assurance within our industry. However, the final negotiated bill excluded other types of seeds and only defined in statute protected grass seed. Since then, farmers have experienced similar issues to those that prompted the grass seed industry to act in 2011. Specifically, in 2014, over 40 growers in the Willamette Valley became entangled in a lawsuit with one of the largest banks in the United States. A single radish seed company contracted acres to grow proprietary seed. Then the bank, then the company, took out a loan with the bank, and then they defaulted on the loan with the bank. The bank obviously wanted the seed, their collateral, and sued the Oregon growers in order to get it. The farmers were forced to form an association to financially defend themselves in federal court. Here we are today, 4 years later. The farmers won in federal court in Portland, but we are currently at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, still in the battle. House Bill 4068 would take great steps in order to protecting family farmers from situations like this. In 2016, I went to my local Farm Bureau meeting and asked for their support in getting the grass seed protections extended to include other seeds within our industry. Not long after that, the Oregon Farm Bureau House of Delegates voted to support my efforts. From there, we formed a work group, and Jenny Dressler from the Farm Bureau will explain our process in drafting of the legislation that you see before you today. The unanimous passage of House Bill 4068 out of the House Ag Committee and the unanimous vote across the House floor shows an understanding of the value of agriculture to Oregon and a desire to work across the aisle to protect our family farmers. I urge you to pass House Bill 4068 and provide farmers in the seed industry with another tool to keep our economic engine working smoothly. Thank you.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. As Anna so eloquently said, this bill was a process for the Oregon agricultural community and a process within Farm Bureau to the point where it is today. Polk County Farm Bureau brought the bill concept forward in 2016 as a result of the radish issues. And that bill made its way through our grassroots process at the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, became adopted as our association's policy in December of 2016. And then immediately following the 2017 legislative session, we worked through a work group process with several different trade associations, the Oregon Seed Council, Oregon Seed Association, Oregon Farm Bureau, and others, towards resolution of this issue. And what was ultimately decided is what you have in front of you, and that was to expand the grass seed low pay, no pay contract protections to the entire seed industry. So we're really proud of the process that this bill went through and the compromise at the end of the day, and we would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Byer, representing the Oregon Seed Council. I guess I don't have much to add. I agree with everything that Anna and Jenny said in front of me, and that knowing how much Senator Thompson likes to work on work groups, we did this one without him, so hopefully we'll hold you. The Seed Council represents the growers and dealers, Oregon Department of Ag, the OSU. Kind of, we bring everybody together. We unanimously agree this is a good bill and should be passed. Thank you.
I just have to tell Senator Thompson that the bill that they're bringing this bunch of seeds into mm-hmm. was negotiated by the vice chair of this committee at that time.
Wow. this seat has a lot of power.
No, don't let it get to your head.
Any questions of this group?
I don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this? Have none signed up. All right. We're going to close the public hearing. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 4068. House Bill 4068. And just add to our fine work here. Okay. Add this one.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 4068 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 4068 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Done deal.
Oh, Mr. Chair, we do need a carrier for this
bill. I will
bill.
Carry it.
Okay.
All right, so we will... Did I close on that? I did, didn't I?
Yes.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4088. Kayla.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4088 prohibits specified activities by performing rights societies in negotiating contracts for paying royalties for performing copyrighted musical works. It requires performing rights societies to provide specified information at least 72 hours before entering into or offering to enter into a contract with a proprietor. It requires performing rights societies to annually file copy of template contracts with the Secretary of State, and it allows the court to impose a fine of up to $1,000 for willful violations. It has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and it came across the House floor in a vote of 59-0.
Mr. Bates, who's going first?
Chair Bill. Sure. Chair Byer, members of the committee, Dan Bates. I represent ASCAP, which is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. We represent the artists that write all kinds of different music. They collect their royalties for their work through us. There are several of us that are called performing rights organizations or performing rights societies, and we help the artists get paid. We do that by working with Dan's members and other proprietors and establishments that play music. This bill in front of you, House Bill 4088, is the work of about 18 months now of effort. We got close last time, and this bill is, I think, a consensus piece of legislation that does the work that Ms. Byers indicated that it does. We're pleased to support it. We're pleased to agree with others in the industry about what the code of conduct should be for our members. We're committed to training them and making sure that what happens in Oregon we can all be proud of in this regard, and look forward actually to an ongoing relationship with the wine growers and Mr. Perry's clients, the restaurants, and other performing rights organizations to make sure that what we do in Oregon we can be proud of.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Jarman representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. This is one of those perfect short session bills, right, with where there's a lot of good work behind it, consensus. We, as Dan said, we got pretty close last session and got close to the goal line. We just need a little bit more of a push, one or two more yards to get in the end zone. So just as a little background, this committee knows a lot about the Oregon wine industry and how it has grown over the years. The industry has become very competitive, and one of the things that the wine industry has done to attract tourists from out of the state and to drive more sales from a direct-to-consumer standpoint is more tasting room activities and really trying to celebrate the tasting room as a way to showcase the wines and hopefully develop long-term wine buyers. And because of that, we have tried to make those tasting room activities much more enjoyable for our guests and our customers, and part of that is having live music played. And we have just seen, because we've increased tasting room activities, sort of increases of activities by some of the agents of the performance rights societies that Mr. Bates represents, that have in some ways had some unprofessional behavior, in some ways disruptive to the business practices happening at these tasting rooms. And I think the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association can say something similar in the organizations or the bars, taverns, restaurants that they operate. And so we're very grateful that the Performance Rights Societies has come together with us to create this new code of conduct. We think that'll mean a lot and send a strong message that we have a stronger statute related to how these agents are to act. And then I think the second, probably more important thing is through the course of these conversations, we've really developed a good relationship with the Performance Rights Societies, not just the one Dan represents, but the others, to really sort of address any future incidences, if there are still some unprofessional activities. I think we can work together to try to really tamp that down and to create better business environments for all parties involved. So we hope that those two things together is going to improve the situation. We're all committed to that. So we ask you to support this consensus legislation, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? No questions? Thank you.
Thanks.
None? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate or House Bill 4088? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 4088.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 4088A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 4088A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. You have a question?
No. I just was appreciating the power of the vice chair.
Thank you.
You know. No other. Is there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 4088A is passed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Monroe wants to carry. We'll close on that, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4111.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4111 clarifies the fees that are required to obtain a Real ID compliant driver license for applicants seeking an original driver license, a replacement driver license, or a renewal of an existing driver license to a Real ID compliant license. There's no fiscal impact, and it has a minimal revenue impact, and it came across the House floor on a vote of 58-0.
It's a pretty controversial bill, Amy.
Mr.
Representative Wilson isn't here, so stretch the time now.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. This bill is really a clarification of the fee coming out of the Real ID law that went into that was passed by this legislature in 2017. The legislative record that was established when the Real ID law went through was that Real ID credentials would be brand new 8-year credentials with the associated fee plus the upcharge for the Real ID credential. When Tom McClellan, the DMV administrator, and I testified before House Transportation over the interim, that struck a couple of legislators, both Representative Witt and Representative Wilson, as perhaps not the best course. And because there was nothing specific in statute that directed DMV that way, and rather it had been legislative history, they, as I understand it, decided it would be best to bring a bill, which is 4111. And so what that bill says that is that if a person comes into DMV and wants a Real ID credential when we begin issuing those in 2020, and if the person isn't up at that time for renewal but just wants to switch from the standard license to the Real ID, that they can do that as a replacement transaction. And what that does is lower the cost for the customer. What it also does is it isn't a brand new full 8 years. It's the remaining time on the license that you already had. That then becomes a replacement license or ID card. It's Real ID, so it lessens the cost. And I believe that as drafted, the bill gets to the desired result of the two sponsors, who I believe have, one of whom has just entered the room.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Amy. Representative, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3. Sorry to be late. We've been practicing our reading at the other end of the building today. About 4111, basically a pricing bill anticipating the offering of the first Real ID compliant driver's license in Oregon, July of 2020. Amy, throw an elbow if I hit anything wrong here.
Okay? Will do.
All right. Ultimately, without the Real ID compliant credential, you'll have to use a passport to fly commercially and not be able to get into certain federal buildings. When drafting the bill, we attempted to ease the cost of conversion to the new credential by giving those people who convert some credit for the unused portion, if we may call that, of their current standard driver license. The solution was to essentially use existing anchor points that already exist in statute with an additional upcharge to reflect Real ID. These anchor points that we talk about utilize the current charges for a new driver's license, a replacement license, or the charge for renewing your driver's license. Then the aforementioned upcharge for Real ID is added. So we felt this was the most cogent, reasonable way of offering some credit for those who wanted to surrender the remaining time on their existing 8-year credential for a new 8-year Real ID credential. So again, arriving at that, I want to thank Amy and those at DMV for some creativity here to attempt to satisfy our constituents and give them some credit for the, as I say, the unused portion of their current 8-year credential.
Super.
Thank you.
Amy, I guess I have a question. When we had this discussion and I reluctantly let the bill go, the discussion was that DMV would cover its complete cost of issuing Real IDs. Are we still going to be able to do that?
Chair Beyer, yes, we are. That's all going to be covered through that upcharge that we keep referencing.
Well, we're good.
All right.
Any other questions? No? I guess not. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
We are going to close on this one and carry it over to Wednesday, and we'll do a work session then. So we'll do that, and I guess we're back up to the top. And
why did we carry that over?
You'll see. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4048.
I have no idea. I'm not as powerful as I thought.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Accommodating other people who want to subject.
That's cool.
House Bill 4048A requires principal real estate brokers, and property managers to complete 30 hours of continuing education in reactivating their license. It specifies that licensees must take advanced courses and practices relevant to their license when reactivating the license, and it requires principal real estate brokers to take advanced course and brokerage practices upon first renewal of the license. It takes effect 91 days after adjournment sine die. There's no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on this, and it came across the House floor on a vote of 59-0.
Cool. Well, Representative Esquivel's not here, so Sean, you're on.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. House Bill 4048 is a result of a work group that the realtors put together about a year ago. The concept, quite simply, is that managing principal brokers, meaning brokers that manage other brokers beneath them, should be provided a specific advanced practices course that will give them better skill sets and tools for making those brokers beneath them, which they manage, more successful. It's a consumer protection piece of legislation. It's the industry regulating itself. And behind me, we have the commissioner of the Oregon Real Estate Agency, Gene Bentley. Here, if you have any technical questions that I wouldn't be able to answer, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'll close my testimony and provide any answers to questions that the committee might have.
It's always interesting when the industry comes in and lays more regulation on them.
Well, to respond to that, Senator Beyer, all brokers are required to do 30 hours of licensing training within the period. We're not adding more time. We're just providing a specific track for those people who do manage other brokers.
Questions? Well, this is an easy group today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Senator Beyer, thank you.
Is there any other questions? Anybody else wants to testify on this? Well, we're going to, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There is a small amendment pending that will not have any direct impact on this, but has to do with the assisted living and real estate assisted to that, that is finding its way to us and won't be ready until Wednesday for your consideration. So we will close public hearing on this, and I believe that takes us to the end. We're done? We're done. Adjourned.